Welcome to Home Space and Reason, a podcast about creating a home that thrives.
Hi there, I'm Christina Browning, your host.
If you know your home could be so much more than it is, I discuss home functionality, aesthetics, and automation. I'm a realtor here in Portland, Oregon, and a home functionality coach. I geek out on every subject imaginable regarding your home and yard, challenging you to think of your space differently to get the most out of every square foot. I pose questions for you to think through about your space and your reason. This podcast is all positive, offering you virtual fist bumps and celebrating every win. Remember, there's no such thing as perfect, but you can still aim for your best every day. Join me on social media by searching for the handle Space and Reason. What is beautiful? What is beautiful to you? Are we truly tuning into what we love individually, or are we following the herd with the beigeification being fed to us about what is or isn't good for resale? Ponder this with me as we think about taste and whether to finish that dining room table or not, with special guest interior designer Arlene Lord. She is an interior designer that has done some of the most delightful and delicious work here in the Pacific Northwest. Her website starts out with, "Home is a sanctuary. No matter where life takes us, home is a central point of comfort, escape, and sanctity, a space that holds you close and welcomes all those you share it with. Function over shock value, comfortable over pristine, design intended for life." That says so much. Tell us a little bit about your history with Lord Design. I want to know, when did you realize that you wanted to be a designer?
Oh, that's such a question I get asked a lot, and I always feel a little stumped by it, because I think it was one of those things that it was just always in me. I was always fussing with what was around me, my room, my own room, the room I shared with my sisters, my dorm room, my first apartment. So I just kept moving in that direction. And I started off actually in retail design, being a visual merchandiser and being a part of blitz crews that go around and work on remodels of stores or new stores being built. And so I really cut my teeth there, learning how to work quickly, trust my gut, and be super creative on a very small budget. And then it morphed into people asking me to help them with their homes. And then I thought, hey, I should probably get paid for doing this. I went to PCC Sylvania and studied a bit under Joanne Thomas. I just learned the ins and outs of actual interior design, because what I had been doing to date was decorating. And then I went to work for a design build firm, and that's where I learned it all. I learned kitchen and bath design. I learned how to design for remodels. It just took a hold of me. I think it already had a hold of me, but then I knew how to wrap my hands around it and make change and make the things that I've been dreaming about and wanting to do happen. And that's how I got here. About, let's see, it's been 14 years ago I started Lord Design. We've just been going strong, decorating and doing interior design for remodels, which is our main focus. And we've been hard at it, just a tiny little team of three.
It's been how wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, when you start in stores, and mm-hmm. if you're doing windows, that's fairly theatrical.
Yeah.
Am I right in that? I mean, the creativity and the theatrics is what draws people to the stores. Am I right?
Totally. Totally. And one of my best friends, her name's Candace, coined the phrase long before I heard it anyplace else, was just go big. So
yes,
we just went big, but it really gave you, that's where I talk about trusting your gut, like just do it. what could go wrong? Just do it. And you just learn so much by forging ahead and making things happen. That might be grandiose to other people, but to you is just the creative track that you should be taking.
Yeah. So I'm going to jump ahead a little bit further quickly, and then we'll go back to some questions that I had for you. But because we're talking about theatrics and trusting your gut, there was a remodel that you did recently. And when you posted about it, it was very theatrical, very rich, intense, jewel tones, purples, reds. Mm. It was stunning. It looked like you were on the set of a movie. Can you tell me about how that client contacted you? What was the context? What room was it? Do you know the room, the post that I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know exactly which one. Yeah. Oh, she is such a blast, this client. We're doing another project with her right now, which is equally as dramatic and just slightly different way. She contacted me actually through House, and this was during the pandemic. We interviewed via Zoom and we just clicked. She's really young. She's very creative and really trusts her own instincts, and she wants what she wants. And so she wanted a gaming room. She wanted a room where she could lounge, shut off the world. She collects all kinds of cool vinyl albums. She's also a lover of cats. She's rescued a few of them. So we had to combine the cats, the records, the gaming, and just creating this zone for her. She pulled together a Pinterest board. And from there, we just took the cues and ran with it. Opus Patai was the contractor on that job. And oh my God, it turned out absolutely amazing. It is one of the coolest rooms I've ever been in because it feels very experiential with the way the lighting and the textures all kind of build on each other.
It's stunning. I was just enamored by your posts. And we will be putting a link in the show notes for everyone that wants to follow her on the socials. And she has some fantastic images of her work there. Recently, I was in a client's home and they offhandedly mentioned that they needed to refinish their dining room table. Mm. And it was warm and it looked like where people actively gathered. That's where they ate. It was right in the middle of the space. It was not high gloss or anything like that, just a standard rectangular dining room table. And she said, gosh, that's on my honey-do list. We need to refinish that. And I wanted to talk to you about the refinishing of dining room tables, coffee tables, and whatever else people may think is not so shiny and new anymore. Mm-hmm. So to refinish or not to refinish, can we go down that rabbit hole?
Absolutely. That's a big fat depends. I feel like if it's a tragic scratch across it that's just not attractive, then yeah, you can refinish it. But really what you're talking about to me sounds like just the patina of life. And I don't necessarily feel like we should be so quick, and we Americans very much are, although the tide is turning. We're very quick to make things perfect. We want things to be clean and shiny like the first day that we bought it. And patina shows the wear, and I think it gives a piece depth and soul, is why we're all drawn to, or most of us are drawn to, vintage and antique pieces. I don't think you should refinish it necessarily. Maybe give it a good, you know, lemon oil or go over it with something that kind of disguises the scratches a bit, but I don't think we should be erasing those things necessarily.
One thing that I noted was that this particular client had three teenagers still living in the house. And so I think if you redo it, you're going to be really aware of how perfect it is. And then you're going to be less likely to really relax when sitting there for fear that you're going to put a ring on the table with your glass, or you're not going to get into that game night as much as you might have because right. You're more gingerly around the space. You don't, you know, you're scared to do anything.
100%. Yeah, no, I have a perfect case in point with that. A friend of mine, I helped her. I sent her to a place to get her treasured table refinished. And then after it was done, we met at her house, she and I and another friend. And we were sitting around this table ready to drink wine and gossip. And and she was so fussy over the table that she kept, you know, making us put coasters underneath it. And she was just like on edge. And so my other friend was like, okay, that's it. We're moving to a different table. This is stressful. I can't sit here anymore.
Totally.
So that was ridiculous. And that, to your point exactly, we should not live in fear of damaging our tables because they're not as precious as our relationships. It's
100%.
ridiculous.
So I recently spoke with Dr. Adrienne Trier-Benick, a professor at
I
sociology.
heard that. It was great.
And we did a collaboration interview about the impact of home renovation shows on our decisions. And I know that you have definitely experienced some of this. From your perspective, what impact have you witnessed?
Well, I think there's just this kind of a homogenized approach to design. I feel like people don't trust their own guts or instincts around what they want around them. They're just following the herd. And there's a blandness to a lot of what you see on HGTV. As an interior designer who works almost entirely in the remodeling world, those prices and timelines are just brutal. It's ridiculous. It's nowhere near reality. But to the point of like, they throw out things they don't need to throw out. They bring in things that are very generic and soulless for the most part. There are some people who do this and that that is vintage, but really it just is kind of watered down the world of design. But I do think that you're seeing a pushback from it. I think that you're seeing a lot of people really falling in love with this thing called like bookshelf wealth, they're calling it these days. It's the imperfection, the authenticity of your surroundings. And I see that coming back in, and I have for a while now. And that's always the way I've lived, but it's not always been the way I've designed because people in general see perfection in still shots and magazines, and they want that for their own homes, even though it's very unrealistic.
I know you enjoy incorporating antiques into the spaces you design. Let's talk about that balance and magical dance that you do, because when I say the word antiques to some people, it can be a trigger to a time thinking of an old cluttered house from their childhood filled to the brim with crap that made them anxious. But curating just the right pieces is opposite of mass production and HGTV thought, and it gives a home interest and character. So I thought maybe you could pull on that thread a little bit.
Oh, this is so close to my heart. I am very much a proponent of pulling in vintage and antique and, the hand-me-downs that you've had through family or that you've been carrying around with you for years. There's something about vintage and antique pieces that, first of all, they're generally built far better than things are today. They have beautiful lines. They have a patina to them. They're interesting in shape and form, and you can't get much more sustainable than a piece of furniture that's been around for 100 years. So I feel like a place that is nothing but antiques is overwhelming and sad in a way, in its own way, if it's not curated well. But a home that has that kind of collected over your life look is very authentic to who we are. We don't generally all go out and buy things all at the same time. And homes that look like catalogs are pretty uninteresting or uninteresting. So homes that have a little bit of this from, the deco era, and there's a little bit of this from the mid-century era, and they're pulled together in such a way that they play off of each other beautifully. That's an interesting home that speaks to who lives there and what they're interested in, and it feels much more approachable. That's something I think that you're seeing a lot more of now, and I hope that it can just continues. It's super European, really, if you think about it. That's why we're drawn to, English style homes, because they're very approachable and very eclectic and collected over time.
I ask my listeners questions about their spaces and their reasons. And what you just said brought to mind the question is, if you look around the space that you're in right now, can you think of any stories attached to anything? And if you can't, maybe that means you should think about incorporating something with some history into your space, because to your point, if everything has mass produced and purchased last week, there's probably nothing to talk about in that space either.
Totally, totally. And I think you should leave room in your house. If you don't have that perfect piece, wait for it. You'll see it. You'll fill that hole. Don't just go to Home Goods and buy just anything just to fill that spot, especially if it's something that greets you every day, something like at your entry or in your bedroom or, well, pretty much anywhere in your house. I really feel like where your eye lands and what greets you should make you feel good and also should be interesting to you and hopefully interesting to other people that come in.
So what you're talking about right now, I find fascinating because sometimes when I'm working with the client, our job is to finish the room, which is, I'm using air quotes, but sometimes there are spaces that you can let marinate and say, if I'm in the mood to shop, let me shop with that in mind and leave with measurements, leave with a photo of that space so you can look at it on your phone while you're standing there in the store. I feel like sometimes we mix up the direction when we say, I feel like shopping. We just go out and see, we meaning people in general, go out and see what strikes us, regardless if we have room for that or not.
Yeah, I definitely see that happening. And I am a proponent of going out with a list and going out with some measurements or some idea of what you want. But I also do feel like sometimes when you go out and you're looking for that one thing, but you come across something else. And if you absolutely love it and it's speaking to you, I feel like you should buy it.
I totally understand that.
Thinking in particular of antiques or vintage stuff. So, because I always feel like you can move things around and make room for it. But to just buy things, to be buying things, to be filling a hole, you'll end up kind of, I don't know, you'll be basically half-assing it because you're just filling a hole rather than filling that feeling that you want to have when you're looking in that particular direction. Does that make sense?
Sorry about that. I had to put a little sound over your voice there just in case small ears are listening, because I always say this is a kid-friendly podcast, but I totally understood what you meant.
I totally get that. Yes.
Part of what I do is I help people to edit down if that happens to be an area. Not everybody needs that and everybody has that issue. But sometimes when we're editing down, I'm finding 47 mugs. I wanted to ask you about your take on when something becomes a collection that you can then work with and display, and when you're just like, this is not.
I think collections are things that you intentionally set out that are of common color or common shape and form, or maybe it's your art, maybe it's, you know, ceramics, maybe it's books, but they're thoughtfully curated. They're not clutter. So they're put together in such a way that they add to the vibe of your home. Clutter, like 47 coffee mugs, is you probably just use the same two over and over again, but you're holding on to the one that somebody gave you 13 years ago because you feel bad to throw it out. Or hand it off to the Goodwill. Somebody else will, you know, reuse it. If it's just stuff that when you open your cabinet and it stresses you out because things are falling out and you just don't have enough room for it, you need to cull that and just give yourself a breath of fresh air when you open that cabinet. And then, you know, make room for the things that are beautiful. I believe we should be using our fine china every day. I believe you should be using your beautiful silver. I believe that, you know, using things that are both useful and beautiful really kind of enriches us in every day. But just having stuff for the sake of having stuff is not good.
Funny you should bring that up, because I did an entire episode called Swedish Death Cleaning. I believe it's episode 63, because there are people that have accumulated and never dealt with any of it and then actually pass away. And the kids find that the parents had so much more than they ever knew. I interviewed a gentleman I used to work with whose parents, he found out, had several storage units of stuff, accumulation that he had no idea they even had. And so I decided that was like a perfect subject matter, because that happens to so many of us. Our parents accumulate and there is no thoughtful evaluation of, do I need this, want this, use this? And if not, can I gift it on to its next home? I'll put a link to episode 63. It's called Swedish Death Cleaning. I don't know if when you listened to that episode that I mentioned, if you caught the phrase constant aspirational messaging. It really resonated with me. And that's kind of what we're all dealing with if we're scrolling on the socials. How has that impacted you?
Boy, I honestly feel like the part that's been a really negative effect on my career, my work, is the lack of decisiveness I see in people. And I believe that it's because they're inundated with so many images and they get this feeling of the shoulds. I should do this. I should do that. So many people are weighing in on their interior design or interior decorating decisions that they have a hard time trusting their own gut and just doing what's right for them because it needs to be Instagrammable or pinnable. And that's just not the way we should be doing this. We should be designing for ourselves. And so I really, really, really see that people have a very hard time making decisions. They're asking too many opinions. They're looking at too many pictures. It's kind of like after you find your wedding dress, that one, don't keep going. Don't keep looking. That's the one. You've got it. Don't get all those opinions and hit 16 more stores. You're going to circle back to the first dress that you picked out. But I really feel like that's been the most negative thing that I've seen. And it makes me a little bit sad, honestly.
Yeah. Well, tell me about how you coach people to trust themselves and to know what direction to go.
It very much is reflective of our clients. I think our through line is that we love color, that we love light and bright, and that we're eclectic. I think that we just naturally design that way, but each of the homes looks very different from each other. Like that game room that you mentioned is very different from, you know, some of our mid-century modern looking rooms that are just white. So I think what I've heard from people who come to us that aren't repeat clients or referral clients, if they're brand new, it's because they come to us because they see that we reflect the client and that they want to have their homes reflect them, but they don't know how to get there. So they hope that the relationship with us will get them there. There's a lot of trust building that goes on in this. We spend a lot of time talking, looking at images, spending time in their homes, and, you know, learning about them. But then we pile that on with, you know, 25 years of experience of hearing things and translating that into a vision for them. And we do show a lot of images. We use a 3D program called Chief Architect, which really helps for people who aren't visual to show them what it's going to look like. And we import fabrics and art and tile and all the things to help them really understand what they're going to get. But leaving room for, you know, for real life, for creativity. We use all of those tools to help build the trust, to help them see the vision. And we try to cocoon ourselves around our clients and hopefully drown out the noise of everybody else all around that's giving them feedback with their design, and that they trust us and that they know that we have their very best interest in mind, and that we really honestly want this to be a beautiful space for them. We want it to feel good for them, not necessarily the rest of the free world, just for them. This is their home, their sanctuary. And that's always the goal.
What is your favorite kind of space to design and why?
Kids' rooms, hands down. We just designed a playroom recently, and it is so freeing because it's a little bit out of the box and you get to think like a kid and lighten things up a little bit. And on the heels of that would be powder rooms, because they're, again, they're the drama. They're where you can go a little bit wild and it's people don't freak out over it. So those are my two favorites, I think.
I love that. And now let's ask ourselves some questions. If this is the first time you've ever listened to this podcast, when you hear the sound, it's time to grab a piece of paper and a pencil for some quick notes, some questions to ask yourself about your home space and your reason. Question number one, when I walk in to my most favorite space in my house, what item in here has the best story attached to it? Maybe it's a footstool handed down from your great-grandpa, or a wooden candle holder handmade by your dad as a gift to your mom. No matter what your answer is, if you walk into your least favorite space in the house, do you have anything in here that you cherish? Might that be why? Question number two. What item in my favorite space is the most saturated in color? Or maybe a different way to think of that same kind of question is, what item in here has the most personality? And no matter what your answer is, then walk into your least favorite space in the house. Do I have something in here with personality or in a color that I enjoy? Might that be why? Lastly, question number three. If you've listened to this podcast before, you may be familiar with the diagram of six lenses that I use when assessing home functionality. One of those is ability to identify sources of friction, simply because that is a skill in and of itself. That is part of why I pose questions for you to think through about your space and your reasons, because today you might have happened on part of the reason you love your favorite space, but don't love this other space. Perhaps you don't have colors in there that speak to you, or an antique that has meaning and history. And so the last question to ask yourself today is, could I fix that? Could I add more color or add something I delight in, something with history? Could it be both beautiful and functional? I'm a person who pays attention to and loves details, from the right doorbell to the pulls on a drawer. I love when the details are intentional, and nobody understands that more than you do. Tell us about your favorite detail in a home. Is there something you always look at when scanning a space for the first time?
You know, honestly, it's not a detail. It's more of a feeling. How does it feel when I come in? And then I generally hone in on the details, because if it feels really good, they probably have really whimsical, interesting detail. It could be a holdback for a window treatment, hardware on doorknobs, especially in older homes, I'm always, you know, kind of paying attention to, because often they're pretty cool if they're crystal or they're old brass knobs. And probably light fixtures are the things that I notice right away. But really, it starts off with just the feeling, and it's the collection of all of those details and objects in the room and how they collectively come off as a feeling.
Let's talk for a minute about sustainability, because mm-hmm. that can be tricky in this business.
For sure.
I know that we're living in a time where I think people are at least somewhat aware that you shouldn't just toss everything into a dumpster.
I think that before you embark on remodeling a place, if you're thinking that the whole kitchen needs to be gutted, you need to step back for a minute and see what can be reused or kept in place before we go wholesale ripping things out. Now, there are times when you just do. The cabinets aren't good enough to be putting new countertops onto. You know, the flow and that the function just isn't working, and it's time for a change. So hopefully you can tear things out and donate them or move them on to be used by somebody else. I am a huge proponent of holding on to what you can that works and that is beautiful and that will contribute to the overall aesthetic of the space and your goal. I recently redid a detached garage over at my studio, and we went to the Rebuild It Center and did all reclaimed windows and doors throughout. I wanted wavy glass. I wanted true divided light. I wanted it to be as sustainable as I could, because we're doing a remodel. So preserving the building and not changing the footprint, but adding all of these doors and windows added so much more gorgeous light to this space and made a mousy, spidery, moldy garage into a beautiful little showroom for us. I think it's just looking at things with that perspective. I try to just approach things with what can be saved and what is beautiful and how can we work with what we have and or repurpose something like doors and windows. That's just the way I approach most things. There are some cases where it just doesn't work, that you do need to start over, or the dream or the desire of the client is such that it just needs to go. And that's my job, is to make that work for them. But I will still continue to look around for, even if it's a piece of furniture or art that we can hold on to and use in the house, because I feel that's really important.
Yeah. So if someone wanted to see the before and after of this space that you're referring to, of this garage space, is that on your Instagram profile or on your website?
Not yet. I have been doing little teasers of it in progress, but I haven't done a proper post.
Oh my gosh.
Well,
you'll have to,
before and after.
You'll have to tag me so I can share it, because I think that would be so fun to include once that's out.
I'm dying for you to see it. I have a disco ball. I have a thing for disco balls, and I set it on the floor in this shop that I've just referred to it as a shop now. And when the light comes in a certain time of day, it sends the refraction around the room, and it is so magical. The lighting in this place is unbelievable. I did not know it was going to be this good. I'm very excited about it.
Oh, that's a win if you had no idea.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, it was super fun.
Wonderful. Well, tell me about your team. You speak of them often, and it's not typical for me to see posts about how close and tight-knit a team is. And I feel like you've nailed that.
Oh, God, I am so lucky. My immediate team is Kimberly Hodgen and Anita Brown. And they've been with me. Kim's been with me for 10, 11 years now. Anita from day one, almost day one. And we all fit together beautifully. Kim is the yin to my yang. I am about more. She is about less. We're always editing each other. I'm like, no, we need more stuff in this room. She's like, no, we need less. So we really balance each other well. And Anita, she keeps the wheels turning, pays the bills, organizes the move-ins, customer relations, all of that stuff. So we just have a beautiful synergy. But broadly, we're very relationship-based with our clients, as well as our build teams, our vendors, the tradespeople. After all these years of business here in Portland, I have really developed and treasure the relationships I have with the various tradespeople and vendors. And they're a part of my team too. Super lucky to work with them. We all look out for each other. We do the very best work when we're all in on taking care of the client. I'm very, very, very lucky. It makes me love my job. Even on the hardest days, I know I've got somebody on my team that's going to help me through it, whether it's my immediate Lord Design team or, you know, the broader team.
Wonderful.
You have touched on this when I heard it in your last podcast and then just in this conversation. I just really want people to settle into who they are and really pay attention to what they're doing for themselves in their homes, and realizing that the investment they make there is very important. We learned it through the pandemic, how important our surroundings are. And I had always known that and felt that, but we were always more focused on how things looked leading up to that. But then the pandemic made us realize that it's about how we feel. So I just encourage people to really think about that. It's not about keeping up with the Joneses. It's not about trends. It's not about any of that. It's how you feel and how your family feels. Make sure that you create a space that nurtures you and gives you peace. That's what I hope for everybody.
I think on that same note, there's something to be said for staying in a home for some time.
Yeah, for sure.
It's disturbing to me that people will sell like 6 years. Boom, it's time to go. We need a new one.
Yeah.
Most times, I don't feel like it's necessary. There's something about the house they don't like. And instead of truly saying, I'm going to call a designer, I'm going to make this space, this part of this house that I can't do for some reason or another. Usually it's a kitchen, let's be honest.
Yep.
If you can just solve that and stay in your space and keep your 3% interest.
Exactly. Which is huge.
It's huge. Like, and I am probably not the person you would expect as a realtor to be saying, stay in your home. But that's why I'm coming at it from the home functionality coach perspective of just saying, what's wrong with it and how can we fix that and keep you there longer? Because I feel like the bits of a home that grow on you, that you learn to love, is because you planted the tree in the backyard and now you're seeing it change color and you're seeing it mature and now you're hanging a swing in it for your grandchild or whatever. Like that takes time.
It does. Oh, I'm so excited that you brought this up because it's so true and it's happened more than once. And this is part of what just makes me so excited about what I do for a living is I've been called into people are just frustrated with their houses. They don't know what to do with it. And they feel like they need to add on or they need to, just grow the space. And really, it's just about the flow of the space and how they're using it. And I just had a meeting not too long ago with a longtime client. We've done multiple projects together. And she and her husband were should we sell or should we stay conversation. And she just really wanted to stay. And she looked at me and she said, and I blame you. I blame you because I love my kitchen. I love my pantry. I love what you've done with my house. So I want to keep doing more and I want to stay here. And sure enough, we are. We're remodeling the house for them to just age out in. And they use every square inch of a rather big home, but they have a really big family. And she said the other day, we had every single room filled. So I love this house and I love that what we're doing to it is making it a nest for the future. And I completely agree with what you're saying. People should stay. If there's a way to stay there and make it work for you, absolutely do it.
Tell me more about this client. So tell me what you are changing specifically for them in order for them to age in place.
They don't have a primary bedroom on the first floor. So we're designing a space that they have a suite all to themselves, including a laundry. And it's all on the same.
So no stairs.
No stairs. They can walk in the front door and go to their bedroom and their bathroom, their closet, their laundry, their kitchen, all of that without ever taking a step. We did a small remodel in the kitchen, just adding windows and light. It was very, very dark and heavy, kind of a 90s, heavy-handed builder kind of look. And so we changed that all up to be light and bright. So we're making it more them and really committing to the house and saying, this is it. We're staying here. We're putting in the money and we're going to design this for living today and in the future. And in ways that the grandkids and the dogs and everybody can just live and not worry about spills or scratches. And it's really exciting because they're awesome people and the house deserves this.
What a beautiful story.
No, thank you. I just love these guys. It's so much fun.
I want to go there for coffee.
Okay.
So when I think of my ideal afternoon, it's literally grabbing a cup of coffee and just picking a neighborhood and wanting so badly to just knock on people's doors and go, can I just look around? I just want to look in the house.
Oh my God. We are so alike. I have a friend that was living in Boston for a while and we were walking around, which is one of my favorite cities ever. And I'm like, hey, could you go make friends with those people there? Because I really need to get in that house.
I just want to see it.
I know. I'm always walking. Dusk is the best time to go walking when people's lights are on and they're home from work and you can see in their houses. I'm like, I just love it. I'm not even looking at the people. I'm just looking at the stuff.
100%.
I don't care what you're doing. I just want to know what your art is like and how's your lighting.
Yes. Cut from the same cloth.
I'd love for you to see the shop in person. I think you'd have fun with it. And it definitely speaks to, because all the furniture in there is all stuff that I found on Facebook Marketplace that I've recovered and or repainted or just kind of touched up the existing finish. So you'll have fun seeing all of that. It's my little collection of, I'm very much addicted to lamps and chairs. So you'll see a lot of them there.
If you're just now joining this podcast and this is the first episode you've listened to, I invite you to binge listen to a series of episodes specific to your outdoor space, starting with episode 25, which deep dives into curb appeal. Episode 26 discusses thoughts and planning of your outdoor spaces with a list of 35 ideas. Episode 27 is all about attracting hummingbirds, butterflies, and birds to your outdoor space, while episode 28 talks specifically about options surrounding fencing, hedges, and privacy screens. It's a fun series, and there's lots of questions there about your space and your reasons. If you're enjoying geeking out with me on home functionality and you'd like more, sign up for my email newsletter, Little Bits of Home Functionality. It comes just once a week and is intentionally short. You'll see one video with a tip or a trick, and as always, I pose questions for you to think through about your space and your reasons. Find the link in the show notes to subscribe. If something about your home is making you crazy and you don't exactly know what it is or you can't put your finger on it, you can hire me for some home functionality coaching. Direct message me in social media by finding the handle Space and Reason. Head to my website, spaceandreason.com, or click the link in my show notes. I'm always excited to hear about the puzzles of the homes with interesting problems for me to chew on and work through with you. Don't forget to subscribe so the shows automatically download for ease of use. Thanks for joining me today. I'll meet you back here for the next episode.